week's edition of the Kentucky Wrestler Report. I'm your host, Corey Guns. Got a really good episode coming your way this week. I'm going to bring you an interview that I did with independent wrestler Dalton Moss. Dalton's been really interactive with us here lately on Twitter. He's been doing a lot of shots with Kentucky Zone Wrestling. So I had him on just last night and did an interview with him. We talk about how he got into the wrestling business, his training days in Ohio Valley Wrestling, how his first bookings went, a lot of different topics that I think you guys will find really interesting. He has a really interesting story and outlook on things, so I'm going to bring you that interview here today on today's episode. But first, it is Hell in a Cell weekend, so I did want to talk a little bit real quick about Hell in a Cell coming up this Sunday and give you guys my thoughts and predictions on the card for the WWE's next pay-per-view. So let's run down the card real quickly. First, you've got Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre defending the tag team championships against Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose. I think Dolph and Drew get the win here and retain the tag team titles. I think this should be a really good match, but I do see Drew and Dolph retaining the titles and keeping that feud alive. I don't think that the Pack versus the Shield is a feud that we're going to see die down really anytime soon, so I think Dolph and Drew get the win here. You have the New Day defending the SmackDown Tag Team Championships against Rusev Day. I see New Day retaining here in this one. Not really sure what direction they're going to go with Rusev Day. Maybe we see finally the heel turn from Rusev on Aiden English, or maybe they throw us a swerve and it's the other way around. Maybe Aiden English turns heel on Rusev, but I do see the New Day retaining their Tag Team Championships in this one. You got Jeff Hardy and Randy Orton in a Hell in a Cell. I've got Randy Orton winning this one. I think Jeff Hardy takes some type of big bump off the cell, somehow inside of the cell, and that bump in some way leads to Randy Orton ultimately winning the matchup. But I think what we're going to remember from this match is going to be whatever crazy bump Jeff decides to take inside of the cell. You've got Ronda Rousey defending the Raw Women's Championship against Alexa Bliss. I think Rousey retains here. Not a whole lot really to be said about this one. Obviously, I don't see Rousey dropping the title anytime soon, so I think she retains her championship against Alexa. On the SmackDown side of things, you got Charlotte Flair defending the SmackDown Women's Championship against Becky Lynch. I think Becky Lynch gets the win here, and we see a new women's champion crowned on the Blue brand. I think Becky really is just too hot right now to not give her the title. I know that she's technically supposed to be a heel, even though the crowd's cheering her. Maybe it would be really nice to see a double turn here and a double switch where Becky actually comes out of this match as the face and Charlotte comes out as the heel. I'm not really sure that's the right direction the WWE is going to go in this one, but I do think Becky right now, she's on too much of a run to deny her, and I think that she does come away with the Women's Championship in this one. Then you've got Daniel Bryan and Brie Bella against The Miz and Maryse. I think The Miz and Maryse get the win here to continue that feud and you give the heel side another win. I think eventually we'll probably see Brie versus Maryse one-on-one, maybe at the Women's Evolution pay-per-view, and then somehow Miz and Bryan have one more blow-off singles match, maybe at Survivor Series, that I think Bryan will ultimately take the big win whenever that is, that we see this feud kind of culminate for the time being. But this Sunday, I do think we see Miz and Maryse get the win. Then you've got AJ Styles defending the WWE Championship against Samoa Joe. I think Samoa Joe finally gets crowned WWE Champion. AJ's had a great run. He's been a great champion. But I think Samoa Joe does get the win here and gets the title. If you remember back at my SummerSlam predictions, I correctly predicted that AJ Styles would retain or at least leave SummerSlam as still the WWE Champion so that he could drop the title to Samoa Joe at Hell in a Cell. And I think that's exactly what happens. I'm going to stick with that prediction. So I think Samoa Joe comes out of this as the new WWE Champion. And then finally, Roman Reigns defending the Universal Championship against Braun Strowman with Mick Foley as the special referee. This one, of course, is inside the Hell in a Cell. I do think Roman Reigns retains the championship. Not really sure how. I think Foley will probably play some type of role in this, either as a way to get the cell opened up, to allow for some interference from Ziggler and McIntyre, and then Rollins and Ambrose, so maybe there's a schmoz of some sort where Reigns ultimately gets the win. I don't think that he's going to go over Braun super clean, because even though they have turned Braun heel, which you may or may not agree with, I don't think that they're going to kill his momentum flat right here by having him do a job cleanly to Roman Reigns. At least I don't think that they should, and I don't think that they will. But I do think that Roman retains the title here. So I've got Reigns coming out of Hell in a Cell as still Universal Championship. It took way too long to crown Reigns the champion, so I don't think they're going to have him drop it in less than a month. And I think, again, this feud between not only him and Braun, but the Pack and the Shield continues on. It would make sense to me to carry this on into Survivor Series, and you could do a traditional 4-on-4 Survivor Series matchup between the Pack and adding one other person against the Shield and a fourth team member. You do that as one of your Raw main events for Survivor Series. That seems to make sense to me. So I think that Reigns comes out as still as champion in this one, but again, I don't see this feud going anywhere anytime soon. So there's my Hell in a Cell predictions for this Sunday. Let me know what you think. Get at me on Twitter. Tweet me your predictions. Tell me what you think I'm right about. Tell me what you think I'm wrong about. What would you like to see happen at the event? So tweet me at KY Russell Report or at Corey Guns, and let me know what you're looking forward to this Sunday at WWE Hell in a Cell. All right, and joining me now on Kentucky Sports Radio, independent wrestler. You may have seen him in the area at Kentucky Zone Wrestling, but he's been all over the place. He's been trained in OVW. He's a MMA fighter, does a little bit of everything. And here lately, if you've been watching our Twitter feed, has been one of the wrestlers here lately to kind of reach out to us and have some interactions with our Twitter account and send out some of Kentucky Zone Wrestling's cards and flyers. So we reached out to him to have him on the show today, and that is Dalton Moss, who joins me on KWR. Dalton, appreciate you coming on and being with us today.
Oh, glad to be here. I'm glad you glad you're having me on.
Absolutely. Well, let's get right into it. Let's talk about you a little bit, and let's start, if you would, kind of take me at the beginning. You know, what kind of first got you hooked on wrestling, made you a fan of wrestling, and you know, before you even thought of actually making it a career and getting into the business, what kind of hooked you and made you a fan from the early goings?
I was a fan since before I can remember. I mean, wrestling is probably the earliest memory I have of watching on TV or hanging out at my grandparents' house, and even at my own parents' house, sneaking out in the living room at night and watching it, turning it on, turn the volume down real low. I remember flipping, as I got older, flipping the channels back and forth between the Monday Night Wars. Just as long as I could remember, I've always been a wrestling fan. And when I hit around the high school age, I was trying to think of how can I make this happen? I've tried to talk my mom into building, let me build a ring and paying for it in her backyard. Tried my dad, nobody would let me do it. I went out for the high school wrestling team and wrestled in high school thinking, hey, some of these moves I see these guys do are what they're teaching in high school wrestling. Benoit, Angle, Lesnar, guys like that when I hit high school were huge influences. And I waited, tried it, wrestled through high school, couldn't figure out where to go try to train. I went to college for a little bit and dropped out and ended up fighting mixed martial arts for 5 or 6 years, and kind of just took a little bit of time off to put on some size. I always fought a lightweight weight class. I was always 152 in high school and 155 pounds when I fought. And I finally just said, I'm going to put on some size and try to bulk up to around 200 pounds. And eventually here it is. I ended up heading down to OVW. Actually, after WrestleMania, the Hall of Fame ceremony, I watched Kurt Angle get inducted, and obviously a huge influence, one of my favorite wrestlers from my high school era from WWE. And watching him get inducted and seeing what he was capable of doing, and had, obviously I'm not an Olympic caliber athlete by any stretch, but a similar background and similar interests. And I was sitting in my living room watching it, and my wife walked in and said, why did you not ever try to go wrestle? And I said, you know, I really just don't know. And she said, well, why don't you find a school and go? And not long after that, I ended up down at OVW.
So what area are you actually from? Where did you go to high school and college at?
I actually born and raised in Chillicothe, Ohio, and that's where I still live to this day. I live on the outskirts of it. I graduated from Chillicothe High School back in 2007.
So when you made this transition, you know, from the MMA to professional wrestling, you know, you found your way down to OVW. Was it, you know, a real lifestyle change? Did you move down to Louisville? Were you making the travel back and forth? How did that situation kind of unfold?
Well, I just bought a house in my area back in 2016. So moving down there full time, I have three kids and they're in school, and my wife and I work, I have a full-time job here that pays our bills. And I said, I really can't feasibly move at this point. So I drove down to OVW every weekend on Friday night or Saturday morning, depending on how I felt, and stayed down there for the weekend with a bunch of other wrestlers in one of the guys' houses that lived in Louisville.
How long of a trip was that for you each weekend?
It's about 3 hours one way.
Wow. So you make the transition from MMA to professional wrestler, and I assume, I got kind of backtracked. Let's backtrack a little bit here. Was professional wrestling, I guess, was your real true first love? What kind of pushed you into the MMA world before making the decision to try to really pursue and make something of professional wrestling?
Well, when I got out of college, when I dropped out and came back home, I was just working full time and just really didn't have anything to do other than work out. And I had always watched MMA on TV and I really enjoyed watching it, but I had actually reached out my dad. First off, my dad had bought me some MMA memorabilia and some just different stuff from different fighters that I liked. But the main thing was, he bought me two hoodies from Ken Shamrock from his website for Christmas the year or two before that, a couple years before that. Bought me those. Ken Shamrock obviously wrestled for WWE for a while and fought MMA both. So he was a big idol of mine at that point. Like, this guy does both things that I really love. But my dad had bought me these sweatshirts and didn't tell me that he had bought them for Christmas. It was going to be a surprise. Well, they never showed up. So my dad reached out to him, their website, Ken Shamrock's Lion's Den website, and I got a package probably in like March after Christmas, and it had a couple sweatshirts. It had a handwritten letter signed by Ken Shamrock apologizing for the delay. It had an autographed picture. It was just so cool to see, like, this dude genuinely actually wrote this and cared enough to send it and apologize for not having something there on time. And I was like, man, you know, not wrestlers and fighters, they're not all jerks and just tough guys all the time and whatever. Like, they can be cool people. And I'd always wanted to wrestle, and I wrestled in high school, and I see a lot of these guys that are fighting have this wrestling background too. And I'm like, you know what, maybe I can give that a shot. So I found a team that just happened to be started up in my hometown, and I showed up one day. I'd been hitting a heavy bag and kicking a heavy bag for months and months on my own, and I knew how to wrestle and could scramble and knew the moves and submissions and stuff from TV. So I showed up to this team and did a tryout with them, and they accepted me in, and I was there for 5 or 6 years after that. Wrestling was always the true first love.
So once you decided to make this transition from MMA to professional wrestling, you go down to OVW. I'm assuming at the time it was still, was it Danny Davis who still owned OVW at the time, correct?
Yes.
So you head down to OVW and Danny Davis, and you mentioned, guys like Kurt Angle, Ken Shamrock that have made the transition either from MMA or, Olympic wrestling, or a lot of guys even, like a Dolph Ziggler or Brock Lesnar who have college wrestling backgrounds. And a lot of times you hear that they really took to it, just kind of like a duck to water, that it was a very smooth transition for them. A lot of what they did in college or in the octagon really translated really well to what they were doing, in the ring. Did you have a similar experience that it was kind of a seamless transition, or were there some hurdles and some obstacles that for you to kind of overcome making the transition from MMA to professional wrestling?
I like to think that I transitioned fairly well. I just trained last summer at OVW. I'm 13 months in. I'm not a long tenured wrestler by any stretch when it comes to professional wrestling, but a lot of the shows that we've worked on and a lot of places in different states that I've been to so far, a lot of them give you the compliment of, hey, how long have you been in, kid? And it's, I'm in my first year still. And oh man, I thought you were at least 4 or 5 years in. You're doing really well. You keep at it, kind of thing. Guys that have been in for 10 and 12 years, I don't get a whole lot of, I mean, obviously there is negative feedback and criticism and things like that, no matter what you do, but I always normally get a very positive criticism after matches with guys in the back and the veterans in the locker room. I didn't have a whole lot of issues when it came time to actual training. I was already in pretty good shape. I coach high school wrestling in my hometown, so I'm on the mats and constantly, cardio is a big thing. Being able to handle other human beings that are my size or bigger or smaller, vice versa, being able to control what their body is doing is a big aspect of life in my world. So professional wrestling just, it kind of came easy, but I don't want to sound cocky about that. Like it just worked.
What was your experience like in OVW? Who were some of the trainers that you worked with? How long were you there? Did you work any matches with OVW before kind of hitting the territories of independence? What was that process like, and what was your experience down in Ohio Valley Wrestling?
Well, when we got down there, it was right before Matt Capitelli had been re-diagnosed with brain cancer again. So Matt Capitelli was our trainer through most of our class. Towards the end, he started having more of the treatments and having trouble, he was not able to make it as much. So some of the guys from Rip Rogers' class came in and helped us, and then we went to Rip's class to learn from Rip Rogers on top of that. I attended Rip's class for a while, and then I didn't work any legit just one-on-one matches, but there were a lot of battle royals, and when you're training, you get to be security and backstage and kind of see how everything plays out. I was a lot of security gigs and a lot of battle royals every time I went down. I was there for Matt's benefit show. I was in the battle royal with like Rockstar Spud and Randall Floyd, the big guy down in OVW right now, that he and I have a similar background.
So once you trained in OVW and kind of cut your teeth there, have you been back recently? They've had an ownership change, with Al Snow kind of taking things over. Have you been back, even just to visit, or and if so, have you noticed any changes or any things, you can kind of tell that are different from the time when that you spent there?
I have not actually got a chance to make it back down to there to train or to attend any of the shows at this point. But from what I hear, I know a lot of the guys that still work OVW shows and that are there every week. I stay in contact with a few of them, and they've kind of told me all the changes that are going on and all the differences from when, just this time last year compared to now. And it seems like it's going in a very good direction. I mean, Danny Davis already did a really awesome job to begin with, and now that Al Snow's involved, and I see all the stuff on social media with, Billy Gunn was there recently and Dreamer was there recently. I know when I was there, they always had a constant influx of former guys that were OVW that have made it to some degree coming back in to help train and to work with newer guys and teach. And it seems like it's going in a good direction.
Yeah, I think so too. Their TV product even seems to be changing. You know, they did a big show at the Kentucky State Fair that Tommy Dreamer was at. They're doing their grand tournament to crown a new OVW champion that Dreamer's been a part of, Abyss, Billy Gunn, you know, guys that you mentioned. Then they're doing their 1,000th TV taping down on 4th Street here in downtown Louisville here in October. So I think, you know, like you said, Al Snow's kind of taking it in a positive direction and doing big things with it. So now, how long were you trained in OVW before you kind of got out on your own and I guess was no longer considered a trainee there?
Well, let's see. I think we started in late May, early June, somewhere in that time frame last year. And then I know I was back down there through September. I took my actual first booking on my own outside of OVW out of state in September. And then I think I went back down a couple times in October to train, and then I was pretty much out on my own after that. I just started hitting up promoters and trying to get booked anywhere I could.
So tell me about that, about your first booking, you know, outside of, you know, familiar territory down in OVW. You're out on your own. You mentioned that you were out of state. So if you would tell us a little bit about your experience, you know, with your first booking and your first couple of matches, kind of, I guess, on your own, you know, out on the road where you're, you know, getting yourself booked and promoting yourself. What was that experience like, and how did those first couple matches go out on the independents?
Well, I only have Twitter. I don't have any social media, and I didn't have any social media when I got to OVW. Those guys convinced me to make a Twitter, and that's my primary source of me blasting myself out there to get bookings and to put myself out for people to see. The very first booking that I took outside of OVW was a complete disaster. the promoter has a really good show. It's a Bandit Wrestling in Tennessee.
Yeah.
They have a really good show. High caliber guys are coming in there left and right now. The very first booking I took, Dave Chris was the headliner with Devin Driscoll and MJF. They had Zach Wentz was on there. They had a bunch of guys from Dave Chris' school that were in that show. There was some OVW guys that were on that card as well. And me and my now partner were thrown into a multi-man scramble match, which on the indies, a scramble match is a big thing. Everybody seems to know how they work and what they are. I had never seen a scramble match before I got to that show, and they threw us in, and we were way too green to be in that match. We didn't know what we were doing yet. We had some moments in the match that went well for us. We had some really bad moments in that match that my partner knows what I'm talking about, and the guys that were involved know exactly what it was. So my first match was a real eye opener that, man, I don't think I'm ready. Like, I should have stayed training a little longer. Rip Rogers actually texted my now partner when he told him we took that booking and we were going to go to Tennessee, and told him we weren't ready and that we're dumb for taking it. And I can't say that he was wrong on part of it. We were way too early in our training and careers to take that booking. Now, it wasn't dumb, because obviously that's an eye-opener, and we see that we weren't ready and we move from there. But after that one, I went and trained a couple times down Cincinnati, Ohio, Hamilton, Ohio. It's fairly close to it, with Cody Hawk at his place. And he put me through a couple training sessions and asked me if I wanted a spot on a card, and I worked his shows every other Friday for the better part of this past year. So that was a pretty consistent booking for me. So my first few weren't terrible. My first match with Cody was first match with him went interesting. Me and a guy that it was his second or third match. It was my second or third match. Cody put us as the show opener for the night on a Friday night. Me and this guy had like 10 minutes, maybe 8 minutes, if you don't count intros. And we ended up doing about 20, if not a little more. We were playing to the crowd, and the crowd was into it, and we just didn't care. And then one of the guys from the locker room ran out and jumped us both and beat us both down. And that's, we ended up being tag partners after that at Cody's show. So it was kind of interesting to see how that worked out.
Again, too young. So judging from your experience, what do you think is, you know, for new and young wrestlers that are just coming in the business, what do you think is kind of the best approach to take? Should it be to stick with the training and kind of stick with, you know, whatever school or promotion you're training with and stay with that for a while? Or do you think there's something to be said to just kind of, you know, throw yourself to the fire and, you know, get out on the road and take bookings and kind of sink or swim, you know, out on your own, kind of what your, you know, experience was similar to where, you know, get thrown in somewhere that you have maybe no idea what you're doing, but it sounds like you still came out better for it because, like you said, your eyes were opened and maybe knew what, you know, what you needed to learn more about. And one of those situations where I guess you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah, I would definitely, the easier route for sure is for a newer person to find a good school, find somebody who's been where you want to be. Train with them, train as much as you can, as often as you can. Stay in a good training environment as long as possible and learn. And, you know, ask your trainer, pick his brain, her brain, whoever it is. Pick their brain, ask them as many times as you can, as many questions as you can come up with. Learn the psychology, learn the basics. Basics are huge. It doesn't matter where you go, basics are the same. Find out what you need to know. Ask that trainer when you're ready. And if they think you're ready, they'll help you get a booking or they'll find something for you. I'm more of a higher pressure person. My jobs have always been kind of stressful. Fighting is stressful. Wrestling amateur style is stressful. That's just how how I live. Adrenaline is a big deal. And learning on the run, getting in the ring and trying to do it the right way in the moment in front of a crowd and not screw up is the way that worked better for me. I don't obviously condone it as much. It's not for everybody, but if you already have a fairly natural athletic background and you're pretty athletic and you've got some decent background traits, you can take to it faster than some other people, but basics for sure. It's, you can't kill basics.
You mentioned, you know, finding a good trainer and sticking with that trainer. And, you know, in OVW, you mentioned that Matt Capitelli, you know, took you through a lot of your training sessions. Obviously people know that we lost Matt, you know, to his cancer not too long ago, but he was a big part of OVW and a lot of people around here in the Louisville area and people that knew of OVW, you know, thought a lot of him and knew a lot of Matt, especially with his exposure on Tough Enough and, you know, being part of the WWE for a while. What were some things that you took from him that, or some of your memories of him as far as a trainer and things that he maybe passed on to you that, you know, you can look back and say that that's something you learned from him or that you'll be able to take with you, you know, as your career continues?
Well, I had another publication interview me about him not too long back, right after he had passed. And some things were kind of misconstrued that I said, and I don't want it to come off strange, but I'm a religious person. I go to church every Sunday. I mean, that's just that's the way we raise our family, and that's the way we are. I had been going to church and was in the middle of a deaconship where I was going to be appointed as a deacon in our church when I started training at OVW. I try to do things the right way. I try to follow that guideline as close as possible. Obviously, nobody's perfect. But when I got there, Matt was always that way. And that really helped kind of keep me on the right path when it came into that world, not letting things stray. The pro wrestling world can turn you the other direction in a heartbeat. I mean, it doesn't matter where you go, there's always going to be something. Matt was always very calm, very polite. I really don't think I've ever seen him in that time frame get angry. He never raised his voice. He had a lot of patience with some guys that you could easily get frustrated with quickly. That's a big thing. Like, I coach high school level kids. I coach junior high kids. I coach peewee kids. I have 3 children of my own that are under the age of 8 years old. And patience is a very hard thing to have, especially with other people's kids sometimes. And Matt had it with grown men that if he told you once, you know, it's not playtime. Like, this is a serious thing. Somebody could get hurt. Pay attention. He didn't say it in a rude way. He never cussed anybody out. He never raised his voice. Like I said, he was a very good role model for somebody to have in that setting.
Yeah, I think of all the, you know, all the stories that you hear, you know, especially at the time of his passing, fell, you know, right in line with what you're saying about how good of a person he was. You know, you couldn't really find anybody that had anything bad to say about him, whether it was at, you know, in a relationship on a wrestling business level or a personal level. You know, everything that I saw and read, you know, had rave reviews about Matt, not only as, you know, a part of the wrestling business, but also just as a person and as a man.
Yeah, I don't think you'll find anybody that will have a bad word to say about him. I mean, he was always a nice guy to me. I never saw him, like I said, out of the class before us that was finishing up when we started our class, the class after us that started that we used to come in and try to help with, the guys that were in Rip's class. I mean, that's a huge group of guys, and not one time did he get upset with anybody, raise his voice, nothing like that. He was constantly smiling and joking around, just hanging out with us, training us how to do the thing that we all love to do.
Well, let's talk a little bit about who Dalton Moss is inside of the ring. You know, you told us a little bit about your outside of the ring life. What about inside the ring? You know, we've told us a little bit about your background, your MMA background. Who is Dalton Moss in the ring? Who do you draw inspiration from? Who do you try to pattern yourself after or model yourself after? Where does that inspiration for Dalton Moss, the wrestler, come from?
Well, honestly, me inside the ring is the it's the me before I got saved and before I started attending church, turned up to about a 9. I'm not quite to the 10 level yet, but when I first started in, most places they look at you and, you know, built decent, tattoos, bald with a beard. Yeah, you look like you're going to be the bad guy. You're going to be a jerk. And I would go out and get a good guy reaction. People would cheer for me. People liked me. It didn't matter where we went. Some states, oh, you know, you're going to be this. No, you're going to be that. I need you to do this tonight. That's fine. I can work either way. I do whatever I need to do. Primarily, me and my now partner, Jay Thorne, who I trained with since OVW, he actually only lives about 20 minutes, maybe 30 minutes from me, and we found that out in training. We are a tag team primarily. We're a stable down at KZW in Kentucky. We're the Smooth Criminals, and our whole shtick is we take a lot of inspiration from the Los Guerreros from the 2000s era of Eddie and Chavo, lying, cheating, stealing, and getting away with it and being slick about it. You know, it's a lot more fun being the bad guy. I think people enjoy seeing that from us. They come to expect like, oh, you know, what are these guys going to do next? And that's what we want. We want people trying to figure out how we're going to get away with it this time. And so far it's worked for us. It's a lot of fun. I blend in my previous background of amateur wrestling and MMA style submissions and strikes going back through matches. You know, I'll mix in traditional pro wrestling. I'll start out and throw a hip toss or an arm drag. I'll throw drop kicks and I'll do a little bit of everything, but you'll see me throw in some MMA submissions, some grappling, some catch wrestling. You'll see me do all kind of, I'll shoot some takedowns here and there. You'll see a little bit of everything out of me.
You know, it's interesting that, you know, you mentioned the differences in your character, you know, as a performer and then outside of the ring. And you mentioned that your faith is important to you. And we've seen a lot of guys in the wrestling profession, guys like Shawn Michaels, you know, Sting, you know, these guys that talk about how when faith came into their life or religion came into their life, it changed them who they are as a person. But from that point, we've never really seen them portray heels or bad guys on television since that point. You know, Shawn Michaels' whole story has been about, you know, his struggle with addiction and, you know, how the role that faith and religion had in his life. And he was a comeback story. You know, Sting has done interviews about his faith, Ted DiBiase. So we've never really seen those guys come back and portray villainous characters after we've already known their story and kind of how their life has changed outside of the ring. You seem to be the opposite and say that you play a heel character while drawing on some of those past experiences, you know, maybe before, you know, you cleaned your life up or religion or faith, you know, entered your life. How do you kind of have you ever thought about that yourself, that that's, you know, an interesting dynamic to have somebody who actually, you know, lives their way one way out of the ring, but then uses some of their past experiences to develop their wrestling character instead of vice versa, instead of maybe using the positive life experiences as their character? You know, you can kind of draw on the negative ones and be somebody in front of the camera while being somebody totally different, you know, behind the camera, behind the curtain, and not use that as part of your wrestling personality.
Yeah, I mean, I completely get what you're saying, and it is kind of difficult. It's strange. I always find myself, I don't like going out when I would wrestle as a good guy. When I was first starting out and people were wanting to cheer for me and promoters, you know, oh, go out and get them to, you know, win them over, kid. Go do what you got to do. I'm not the white meat baby face that wants to go out and clap and, you know, rah, rah, cheer for me. Like I come from a serious background of wrestling and fighting. Like, I don't want to go out and win you as a fan because you just want to cheer for me because I'm begging for you by clapping and asking for it. I'm a serious baby face if I wrestle as a good guy. I'm a serious competitor. It's not a, you know, everybody's going to cheer for you because they love you. They're going to cheer for you because they respect me and what I'm capable of. So going to the other side and being the bad guy, it has its times where it's a little more difficult. I have a line that, you know, certain things I just won't do. I make it a point not to cuss, especially, you know, out in the crowd or anywhere. Even if a promoter says, oh, don't do it anyway. Like, I'm not going to. I have small children of my own, and that's one of the things that was hard for me at first to get used to was you go to walk around the outside of the ring, and when you first come out, you know, your music's playing, kids are all reaching out wanting to high-five you, and when you're a good guy, you can get away with it. And when I'm trying to be a serious baby face, good guy, I'm not going to shake your hand. When I'm being a bad guy, I'm not going to shake your hand. And the distinguished thing between that was when kids would reach out for me as me being, you know, one of the smooth criminals and I'm being a bad guy and they're supposed to be booing me, they'd reach out to shake my hand or give me a five or whatever, and I'd pull it back and no, I ain't shaking your hand, and then they just boo you like crazy. And it became more of what can we do to be more original and still get heat with the fans and get people mad at us and wanting to meet us in the parking lot. But a lot of them have stuck around down, and it's, I know kayfabe's a big thing. Everybody talks about one way or the other. Kayfabe's a huge deal. We've been in locker rooms down in Kentucky specifically that I've gotten done wrestling in the ring, had the whole crowd against us. We were huge. Everybody hated us. They were going to meet us in the parking lot. Some of them would wait in the parking lot for an hour waiting on us. Some of them would stand inside talking to another favorite wrestler that was a good guy or whoever, and they would see us come out, talk to somebody else, help tear down the ring, do what we needed to do. It's hard to be a real life good guy and then play a bad guy. But if you think of it as a challenge on your creativity and try to be unique about how you do things without cussing the fans out and just flipping everybody off and screaming at them and telling them how horrible they are, if you have fun with it, they still get what they need out of it, and you still get what you need out of it.
Yeah, I think that's really awesome. You know, honestly, to especially in this day and age, like you said, that, you know, when it comes down to it, you're playing a part, you know, like you're playing a part in a movie. So, you know, that you can play a role and play a character on screen or in front of a crowd, and that doesn't mean that you necessarily have to compromise your personal values or beliefs outside of the ring in order to do that. You can be an effective heel and get people to boo you when you're working, and then still be a different guy outside of the ring and not compromise those two things. And like you said, I think it takes creativity and you know, and smarts. And like I said, I think that's a really cool dynamic, because like I said, you don't hear about that a lot. A lot of times, especially back in the day, the guys that were heels usually heard that, you know, they were pretty mean guys and unpersonal guys in real life too. And then sometimes even the guys that played good guys weren't necessarily the best people outside of the ring. So yeah, I think that's a really cool and different dynamic to hear somebody talk about their life outside of the ring and then be able to portray a heel character, inside of the wrestling ring.
Yeah, I mean, you could listen to all these guys that are retired now and out of the business that do podcasts and all this, you know, media that's out there. And some of them were bad guys. Some of them were good guys. And you can hear the stories they tell of guys that, you know, you hear, oh, this guy was, he played a character that was a wimp and he couldn't do anything. He couldn't beat anybody. But then in real life, they tell stories about going to the bar and how he was the toughest guy in the room. You can be both things. And the crowd, you know, 20 years ago, if you were a bad guy in the ring, those people are going to believe that you're a bad guy for the rest of your life. And you know, most guys use a different name. That's an obvious, everybody knows that from now. I use my real name. My name in the wrestling ring is my name on Monday morning, sitting in my office at my job. It's my name when I go sit on the mat at a high school tournament and yell at people's kids and tell them what to do. It's my name when I come home and my kids are being tucked into bed. I'm the same guy all the way around, and people get to know you and see what you really are. And then they go watch you do what you do in the ring and put on that character and play that persona. And if you were that every day, you would be in jail. I mean, you can't live that life for real. That's why a lot of it is now, I'm putting in air quotes, entertainment. It's everybody's kind of the cat's out of the bag. You know, most people have got it figured out. It's a character. You have a real life. And if you follow me on Twitter, you see it. I'll post one day about hitting the KZW champion with brass knuckles and knocking him out and pinning him. And then 2 days later, I'll post a video of my 8-year-old son hitting a ball at baseball practice, or my 3-year-old running around in the yard, and my 6-year-old daughter doing gymnastics. You know, I'm the same person. One's a character, one's me all the time. And you just got to learn how to balance it.
Well, let's talk a little bit then about where people can see Dalton Moss, the character here around Kentucky. Like I said, you know, you got my attention by tagging me and messaging me some things about Kentucky Zone Wrestling and some shows and events that you were doing around the area. And so that's kind of how we first interacted and then asked you to be on the show. So tell me a little bit about how you got connected with Kentucky Zone Wrestling, what you've been doing with them lately in your Smooth Criminals tag team, and then where we might be able to find you here coming up in the Kentucky area.
Well, Kentucky Zone Wrestling came about. We just added him into our Smooth Criminal team. We went from a tag team to a trio. Ryan Thomas, who is on Twitter, that's his same name. You can look him up on Twitter. He is actually from Lexington. It's where he lives. And he trained with us at OVW and turned us on to this promotion in Kentucky. And we made the trip. My partner, Jay Thorne, at the time, rode down with me one show, and everything was cool. We started out down there. Actually, all three of us were separate, and I got interjected into a heavyweight title match my second show there, I believe it was, second or third show. Our first show there together, we all three faced each other in a triple threat, and Ryan picked up the win over me and Jace, which is still to this day a sore spot of conversation we don't want to talk about. We ended up jumping him a few times and beating him up and giving him a hard time, kind of an initiation, and we added him into our group. We've been back and forth feuding with the KZW champion and their tag team champions. We actually just faced them all off 5-on-5 war games in a cage this past Saturday, which we were victorious. I'm going to go ahead and call it that way. Their commissioner threw the match out because in Kentucky, if somebody bleeds, you have to stop the match and get them out of the ring and clean them up, which I think is ridiculous. If your guy can't handle getting beat up and he's bleeding a little bit, he automatically has a way out of the ring, which to me is an automatic win for us. So KZW's heavyweight champion, Repik, in the center of the ring was busted open and wallowed around on the ground, and we wouldn't let them into the cage to come get him and clean him up and take him to the medical facilities. So they threw our match out. And to me, that's still a win. We were standing. He was on the ground, laying there. You can see that on my Twitter, at Wrestling Dalton, or you could see it on my YouTube page. You can find Ryan Thomas's YouTube page or his Twitter. It's all over the place. You'll see me blast out little bits and pieces of it all the time. We primarily in Kentucky, we wrestled one show with Legendary Larry at PTW a while back, and we primarily work with KZW. They run, you know, 3 times a month mostly, and we're down there pretty consistently.
And you guys got any shows coming up here in the next couple weeks, and any dates or cities that you want to tell us about?
Kentucky Zone Wrestling, I do believe, has a show on September 22nd and September 29th coming up. Past that, I'm not sure what they've got going on, but that's a pretty good place to keep an eye out for the Smooth Criminals to turn up.
All right. And as you mentioned, fans can also follow you on Twitter and also on YouTube as well.
Absolutely. I'm constantly on Twitter blasting out photos, match stuff, dates, random facts about myself, just whatever I can do to just have some fun on social media. I don't take it real serious, but there is some days that some serious content gets put out. My YouTube has some videos of my old MMA fights. It's got whatever matches I can get my hands on when it comes to video. It'll have random stuff coming up over the next 5 or 6 months, it'll have a lot of high school wrestling content from my team. Just, you never know what's going to come up on there.
All right. And as he said, you can follow him on Twitter at Wrestling Dalton. Make sure you give him a follow there. I'll also be tweeting out his handle on our Twitter feed as well once the podcast goes up, so you can find him there as well. Check out his YouTube page, and make sure to check out Kentucky Zone Wrestling. I'll be tweeting out and retweeting some of their flyers. Like I said, Dalton here lately has been doing a good job of getting those to me, so I'll make sure that I retweet those out, and make sure that you guys check him on the circuit, and also the Smooth Criminals as well. Dalton, I really appreciate you coming on the show. Great conversation. Hope we can have you on again and maybe talk about some more topics and talk a little bit more about your story. But I really appreciate you coming on and being with us today.
I appreciate you having me and giving me the time to talk and listening to me ramble and all that good stuff. Yeah, anytime you want to have me back, just shoot me a message on Twitter. My DMs are open. I will gladly chime in on whatever you want to talk about.
That sounds good. We'll definitely do it again sometime. I appreciate you coming on KWR.
All right. You take care.
All right, that'll do it for this week's edition of the Kentucky Wrestle Report. I want to thank you guys for being with us this week. I want to thank my guest again, Dalton Moss, for coming on with us and for his interview. Make sure that you guys are following us on Twitter at KY Wrestle Report or at Corey Guns. I'll be tweeting and retweeting some more information about some local events and independent shows going on around the area this weekend and on into next week. Make sure you guys check out Hell in a Cell. Tell me what you think about the event. Tell me what your predictions are. And also make sure that you're following me on thechairshot.com. You can find my articles up there every week. This week I'll talk about my top 10 best factions of all time. If you follow along on WWE.com, they released a top 10 list of the best factions of all time that I thought was just utterly ridiculous. So it motivated me this week to create my own top 10 list of the best stables in wrestling of all time. So you can go to thechairshot.com and check that out. And you can find us right here every weekend on the Chairshot Radio Network for the Kentucky Wrestle Report. We'll see you guys next week.
Symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.